Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and today is Friday, and it's a glorious morning here. It's hotter than the Dickens, and it'll probably rain the rest of the day. I'm sure you don't really want to hear that if you're having a drought in your area, but unfortunately, we have the rain right now for you guys, but fortunate for us, there's great rain, so there's a lot of growing going on in the city. Today we'll be talking about growing in the city, growing farms, local produce, urban farms, how to get started, and all of those things that you might think about saying, I have a city and, you know, my best place of getting my fruits and vegetables is Walmart. Yeah, well, I went to Walmart the other day, and Walmart had tomatoes that were from Canada in the middle of July. So why would I have a tomato from Canada in the dead of the summer when I could potentially be getting it from a farm right down the street? So we'll be talking about that today. My guests are the New Orleans Food and Farm Network, and the beginning person who started that organization is Sanjay Karad. He is with us today, and also the Recirculating Farms Coalition, and the person who started that project is Marianne Cuffone. So welcome to you both, and you're both on the line.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Great. I'm so glad you're here. I know today will be a busy day, probably this weekend, we've had so much rain lately and so much heat. You must be in the height of your growing season.
Yeah, actually, we have New Orleans is fortunate enough to have a 365-day growing season, so there's actually a lot of growing happening year-round. And that's one of the things I think Marianne and I have tried to tap into, is to talk about the opportunity we have in this climate that we do have to grow food locally.
You know, it's so interesting because every time you go to some of these grocery stores, the larger chains here in town, and I can remember in January buying a yellow pepper, and it was from a country like, where was it? I don't know if it was the Netherlands or something, but it was like across the ocean. And I'm like, okay, so I have this in January. When did it grow there? And if it was picked ripe there, it could have been dead by the time they got it to the ship. And how long did it sit there? And how long did it take to get across that ship and then get to the distributing place? And, you know, people don't realize all of these steps and hands on the food, it's got to be picked pretty not so ripe to be able to get to you through all these chains.
Right. And actually, one of the interesting things, I mean, it's the globalization of food kind of really took off over the last couple of decades. But one of the things that you have to understand is that, you know, getting that here, I mean, the things that what Food and Farm Network is interested in is if you grow locally, that means local farmers are actually getting money. And not only is it fresher, but the economy of the local area is improved by that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think Food and Farm Network, you know, started, and I should probably correct that. I didn't found Food and Farm Network. It's been around for a decade now. I am now the current executive director, and there were three prior, you know, before me. And we've evolved to sort of fill the gap of trying to figure out how to build a local food system within communities. And that's kind of why Marianne and his group and our group combined to talk about, you know, how we're going to do that. So that's, I just wanted to make sure, so that if anyone heard that, I did not found this organization. There's a lot of people who came before me.
Okay, that would have been me. Okay.
No, that's okay.
Sorry. So, you know, I was looking at the website, and the website for New Orleans Food and Farm is www.nof, F as in Frank, N as in Nancy, .org. And Sanjay, I was noticing on there you had spoken a little phrase that said culturally appropriate food. Can you tell us a little more about that? I know here in New Orleans it's not like it's a mecca. You wouldn't say I'm going to go there and, you know, I'm going to get healthy for a week. So what would culturally appropriate food be here? Because it's certainly not the coffee and the donuts or, you know, or the sauces.
it's definitely it's what people used to grow in their backyards or on really close-in farms. Actually, in Kenner, there probably were farms at one time to feed, like, the French Quarter. You know,
right.
What people really grew here according to, you know, what really does grow well here. And, you know, we can talk about climate change, but as climate's changing a little bit, we actually don't have the chance of freezes. So there's actually the potential of having tropical-like things also growing here. So when we say culturally appropriate food, we mean what can be grown here. So we're not going to try to force, you know, fields of corn on the lower Ninth Ward because it actually doesn't really grow well down here.
Right.
We also want to make sure what happens in the lower Ninth Ward is controlled by the people in the lower Ninth Ward as well. So it's kind of it's trying to touch on both sides, which is like we're not trying to impose a model from anywhere, that works in Kansas that may not work here. We're trying to build models here that will work here on growing food and distributing food.
Well, I think also, you know, if you take collard greens and you take them to Sedona in Arizona, they're going to be like, I don't think so, you know. So it's having the food, like you said, that does grow there, but they have something in the back of their head, oh, yeah, my grandmother used to make that, or I've heard of that before, you know, or it was in my old recipe, I just took it out, but maybe I'll put it back in now. So that's pretty much how you can get people to want to come back to it versus trying to teach them something that's so foreign they can't grab the concept.
Right. I mean, and I think Recircling Farms is actually bringing, like, a different type of technology that works, especially in areas that don't have great arable land, living in a city that have issues in contamination. I think we have to look at new technologies, still talking about culturally appropriate food, but maybe growing it a different way.
Well, and that's one of the really exciting things about partnering Recirculating Farms Coalition and the New Orleans Food and Farm Network. We are merging sort of traditional soil-based growing with innovative water-based growing, and New Orleans is a perfect place to do that. Even though recirculating farms can be used just about anywhere, it's really an ideal climate and a really ideal sort of test case here in New Orleans because we can grow all year round, and you know, it's a sort of the quintessential urban environment where there is pollution, where there is noise, where there's lots of people, where the available space is perhaps rooftops and terraces and side lots or oddly shaped spaces or paved over spaces, and we can still grow on those.
Well, can you define for us, because a lot of our listeners don't really even know Recirculating Farm. When they think of growing food, it's called throw some seeds out in the grass and let's see what comes up. You know, something comes, it's good to go.
Yeah, this is a little different. A lot of people are familiar with hydroponics, where you grow plants using, you know, nutrient-rich water. This is that plus. Recirculating farms are essentially what they sound like. It's a water-based growing system where the water is constantly cleaned and recirculated throughout the garden or farm. And that sounds really complicated and new agey, but it's actually fairly ancient technology. We've been using hydroponics and water-based growing for centuries. And we've just sort of put a new twist on it, which is the recirculating aspect, where you are pumping the water in continuous cycle. So you use a lot less water, and you can rely on rainwater, and you can grow a fairly wide range of things. You can do vegetables and fruits and flowers and herbs, but also you can do fish. And so some systems called aquaponic systems combine aquaculture and hydroponics, and so you can have protein and produce all growing in the same farm.
And it reduces the amount of nutrition. No, like basically you're using the fish poop as fertilizer for your plants. So it's a way of not having to go and buy chemical fertilizers.
Absolutely. Most of these systems run chemical-free.
So my question would be is, if I have fish in the water, mm-hmm. and they're, I guess, are they milling around the plants and the roots?
Oh, no.
Well, they can be. You know, there's a very wide range of designs for these farms. You can build them up or out in a circle, in a tower. There's no right way to build these systems, and that's what makes them really exciting because you can put them just about anywhere. So you can have your fish under your plants, or you can have a separate fish tank and plants hovering above the tank. There's all different designs, and I would encourage people to take a look at the pictures we have on our website. We have a variety of slideshows and videos that show all the different types of systems that are out there.
And would you like to give us your website?
Sure. It's www.recirculatingfarms.org.
Great. So everybody will be able to check there, because my idea of let's grow something in water is, I'll take a clipping off my plant, stick it in a glass, and put it in the window, you know. So this is a far-reaching, better design to be able to do growing on a bigger scale and some more products.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that really, really interested me when Marianne and I started talking about this is the idea that in what we're dealing with is taking empty city lots and turning them into, you know, micro farms, like a 3,000 square foot lot, which is like a 12th of an acre, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to grow there, and the fallow season in the summer is when a lot of gardeners aren't growing anything, and with shade cloth and do-it-yourself built wooden tank with a pond liner, you can have some fish and have a pump that basically puts water through a small area where you can actually still be getting greens in the summer under shade cloth. On the food justice side, that's like an amazing addition to when you can grow. I mean, I used to do food systems work in New York City. The fallow season was winter when people would build hoop houses. I came to learn after being here for a decade that you need to do something else for the
right.
fallow, which is actually when it is not fallow up in the north. So it's kind of interesting. We need to look at all different ways to increase food access.
Well, you know, I really am interested in the concept of why would you even want to be bringing these foods here and showing how to grow. Who is your customer? Is your customer a grocery store? Is your customer a person walking down the street? Or are you really trying to root the concept, you know, that food is where, you know, you need to be starting to look to you know, help your economy, help yourself and your health? Or what is, when you come here and it's like you look at it and you're like, I don't know what to do, where do I start? How did all of these projects start out?
Well, I think, you know, Sanjay and I are going to have a couple of different answers here because New Orleans Food and Farm Network's been here for quite some time and Recirculating Farms Coalition is fairly new. I can tell you we decided to headquarter the organization here because I personally have a long history with New Orleans. I worked in fisheries and ocean policy for many years, and so I got to know the communities here and was stunned by the crazy dichotomy in the food system where tourists coming here had access to very high-end, very popular, very well-known chefs and, you know, hot cuisine, and New Orleans is known for that. And yet many of the residents here struggled to find affordable, healthy, fresh food. So that was sort of stunning to me. And I thought that Recirculating Farms would be able to help address that because they're so versatile, because they can be inexpensive, because they're very eco-friendly and space-efficient, that New Orleans would be a great place to start, you know, building some of these farms in a community-based way. So that was the motivation. That, and New Orleans has been called the worst food desert in the country a number of times because, you know, we only have, as of today, post-Katrina, 21 grocery stores that each serve about 16,000 people. That's kind of crazy. So,
right.
So that was my motivation, was to try and provide, you know, healthy, fresh food in the communities that need it the most. And I think we've been doing a good job of that thus far.
Yeah, and it's true, because it's like when we think about who our clients are, for us, we don't think of it as community building through food. And one of the ways that we've done that in the past is post-Katrina, the founder of this organization, she and several people came back and started doing food maps for neighborhoods. So people when in the rebuilding could actually identify where food was available, because there wasn't much available. I mean, that was like one of the triage projects that really like sort of captured the idea of like the food desert idea. I think that's where it kind of started, like around 2006, 2007, when people started talking about the lack of food. And post-Katrina in New Orleans definitely was that. But then what came out of that was we started realizing that there was a lot of local expertise out there and interest in growing food on a lot of the empty lots that are out here. And we started working with people to do backyard gardens, where it was like very local food security right in your backyard, to then now saying, okay, we have people who really want to go to the next level. They want to scale up to the next thing. So we are now looking at incubating projects that would be community-based, neighborhood-based, neighborhood-led projects. And actually, the project that Marianne's group and Food and Farm Network, Recircling Farms and Food and Farm Network, are working on is the creation of a central training center, market farm, community farm hybrid that serves as an example of many more that need to be done. And we're working with groups on thinking about other areas of the city where we should be doing that as well. So the idea is to incrementally increase the amount of successful producing farms and finding markets for them. And then that eventually would be the general public. But initially, it's neighborhoods that don't have really access to great food. And some people are doing a little bit in their backyards, and we're hearing from a lot of community members who say, I want more space so I can grow more. And, you know, it could be for personal use, for sharing, or even for market. And we're here to try to help them.
So what I'm hearing also is that you're basically trying to also teach everybody how to be able to start growing. I know I saw on your websites that it said about how to grow. You have a growing guide, you know, because there are so many issues here about soil, pests, and, you know, limited resources, and then you define all of those in your growing guide.
Yeah, we did that, and we actually created it. It was a bunch of tip sheets that we would hand out at workshops. We have this series, a general horticultural series called Grow Mo Beta. It happens once a month. And what we realized is we were developing all these tip sheets, and then there's other organizations like LSU Ag Center and Southern Ag Center and other agricultural groups have all these tip sheets. And what we realized is we need to create kind of a wiki format so that
right.
When people find more information, they could change it. Because what we're learning is there's a lot of local knowledge that we were not aware of. But people knew specifically about certain plants and certain things that really work really well in New Orleans that doesn't come out of, like, you know, the LSU Ag Center.
Mm-hmm.
So we set it up as a wiki. So it's an evolving thing. I mean, that's, for Food Farmer, that's kind of one of our roles is, we would like to serve as kind of the information resource connection hub for all different aspects of what comes out of food growing, which is marketing, which is teaching, which is training, which is just, you know, how-to booklets for some people who don't want to go to a workshop and they just want to know how to do it, and they're going to do it. And we're here to support that.
Well, and to that, we are jointly doing two workshops that are supported by USDA, one in the fall and one in the spring, that will also teach the concept of, you know, using both traditional soil-based growing and then the newer concept of water-based growing.
So, Marianne, if you could give us your contact information where people could find out some more information. Do you have a newsletter on your website they can sign up for? And how might they contact you?
We do. If they go to the website, www.recirculatingfarms.org, or they can email info@recirculatingfarms.org. We do have a newsletter that I would encourage people to sign up for. We'll advertise those free workshops in the newsletter, and I know Food and Farm Network will have them on their website. We'll have them on our website. We plan on doing outreach to the various communities. So hopefully they'll be pretty well publicized.
Great. And Sanjay, if you could give us your information, that would be great.
Sure. Our website is www.nofsn.org. And on our site, you'll see actually what our we have like several sections, and I think our resources page will have that, but most likely as we get further roll out the training program, we're going to have it'll be featured on top. The interesting thing is what we're trying to do is if you look at the whole food system as a whole, we're talking about there's land, so we're trying to figure out how to get available land to people who are ready to grow, and we're trying to grow the supply of farmers who can do it, so they can be successful. So it's like it's business training, it's marketing training, it's being mentored by people who are already doing it, because I think that's really important, is that, you know, farming is a lot of hard work, and there's very specific knowledge that you pretty much will learn, you know, from individuals besides all the different types of opportunities. And then what are the different alternative ways you can, you know, you could diversify your farm? And I think that's really what we're hoping, is that, you know, a year from now we will have 10 new farms, you know, 10 city lots that have been turned into micro farms. Because we're not talking about like acreage here. We're talking about, you know, 3,000 square feet, or if it's a double lot, 6,000 square feet. And they're small, so they have to be really efficient and productive. And I think a combination of recirculating farms with soil-based growing might be the way that some people may choose, and, you know, they get to decide if they want to do that, and that's it's our role to expose them to it and give them the connections to the people who know how to do it, so then they then will become the mentors for the new crop that we're going to, new crop of farmers we hope to get every year, you know.
So pretty much what you're trying to do is say, if I may have access to land, I can contact you and you could help me figure out how to develop that land and to develop it into a project and be able to get some profits from that land, to be able to get some good food from that, correct?
Absolutely. You know, we offer both our organizations and collectively, and many other groups in New Orleans offer a lot of do-it-yourself and links to videos and experts and mentors. You know, we also have these more formal trainings if people are interested. But, you know, the future is very bright. I think I had mentioned to you before this call that mm-hmm. we have some exciting news, which is we are jointly building a food and farm center downtown in New Orleans, and that will, in the future, be a hub for classes and demonstrations and also commercial farming and a farmer's market and a variety of community events and programs for youth and seniors and families, all sorts of exciting things. So we're very much looking forward to that.
So what would be the cost to the people? Let's say I wanted to work with either of your groups, or are there costs to get this information? Are there costs to get your help? Or, you know, how do I do that?
We have a very open source policy. Like, we're not necessarily, like, I can't copyright a lot of the knowledge that we are putting out there, because it's built on the knowledge from other people. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to consolidate them and point people to the resources. So we make that available for free on our website. I mean, one of the key things for us is that Food and Farm Network, we are doing this project with Recirculating Farms Coalition, to incubate the farm center. And that farm center is just one of the many pieces of the infrastructure that we see that we are going to help create. So we try to figure out where we can find resources, be it in grants or be it in loans for farmers, or we look for other kinds of ways we can help them. So actually on our website, on the front page, we have this form, because we get a lot of calls. It's called the Potential Projects Form, which is serving essentially as the sketch of the business model or the project model that people can then contact us with, and they could fill it out, and this way we can respond to it, because we were getting so many that we needed to somehow control it. So we want to serve truly as a network and as a resource, you know, a clearinghouse for people who want to do this. Because there's not a lot of information very specific to the city out there. And the idea here is to figure out what our partners are doing, see if they want to share with people, and provide that. I mean, the other thing on our website we have is I know people who are interested in getting involved in a lot of these projects as volunteers or things like that. We, for our partners or whoever asks us, we will post internships and volunteer opportunities for all our partners. So you, if you ever are interested in getting involved, we have it right there on our front page, because the idea is people are interested and we need to figure out different pathways they can get involved at whatever level they're comfortable with, and then to get further involved, because it's really engaging the public in thinking about maybe growing great food. I mean, for us, it's growing great food locally, which means people who didn't have access before have it. Building the local food economy, which means maybe if they get really good at it, they might consider actually becoming part of their careers. And any other things, any other creative ways that people want to come up with projects, we'll try to help them if it seems like a viable project.
And we coordinate with New Orleans Food and Farm Network if people are interested in water-based internships or learning more about hydroponics, aquaponics, or aquaculture. They can contact Sanjay or us.
You know, that's great, because what my goal on doing this radio show has always been is taking projects that are always giving back or giving information or out, and someone could walk in and say, well, you know, I'd love to do what they do, but I have no clue how to get started. And you both are offering ways to be able, if you're an intern, you can obviously, you know, jump right in and see what how to do it or how not to do it or how what challenges you may be coming up against or what kind of things might be a challenge if you took that project and started out on your own in a different area.
Absolutely. And we also do have do-it-yourself links and videos and manuals and photos on our website as well.
Sanjay, I wanted to ask you about the community orchards that were done on the lots since 2011.
It's kind of interesting. That project started out with the availability of getting a lot of trees from a foundation, and the Apache Tree Grant Foundation has a commitment to giving 1 million trees, and I think this might have been the first time they ever got a request for fruit trees. So
we requested
and received 1,000 fruit trees at the beginning of this year. It was citrus trees mainly. It was oranges, lemons, limes, grapefruit, and then we also had fig trees and avocados, which that was the first time I knew that they actually grew here. And other people have now asked for other trees, but these were the most easily, gotten from a local source in Belchase, the Becknell Nursery down there. So we were donated these trees, and we started reaching out to everybody we worked with to talk about whether they wanted a fruit tree in their backyard, whether a school wanted some for their gardens, whether any community groups. And a couple of community groups started looking at creating orchards. And one of them is on two lots in the 7th Ward that was done by Tulane City Center. which is a community design workshop out of Tulane, and a bunch of neighborhood people, and they planted 20 trees that became a neighborhood orchard that becomes like a public space. And it was interesting. Everyone kept saying it's like they're transforming the landscape of that neighborhood, that block, by having this.
Right.
Beautiful. And they did that in New Orleans East at this the Apostolic Church Outreach Center. And then another group is doing it as well in at a mosque. And we realized, wait, this is kind of an interesting way possibly of dealing with vacant lots, in that if you go into a neighborhood, we can start talking about taking one of the empty lots and say, who's willing to take care of these trees, and it becomes part of the neighborhood's landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And we are getting a lot of interest from people who are saying, yeah, I want to do an orchard on an empty lot that I'm going to try to get access to. So we're doing it again. We've asked the Apache Tree Grant Foundation again for 2012 trees this year. Hopefully in November we will get them. And we plan to do it again. It's part of our what we're calling our NOLA edible forest. So it's backyards, front yards, schoolyards, churchyards, mosque yards, as well as maybe even just a neighborhood orchard. And I think that creativity that we saw that happened in the 7th Ward is brilliant. And to us, it's like a model that we didn't really think of, but definitely it seems to be working there, so maybe we could do it again. So we're going to keep trying to do it. And it's a way of the neighborhood basically claiming up some land that was probably blighted, overgrown, not being used, and it's something beautiful, and it becomes another neighborhood asset. So that's, you know, we're hoping that as people see more and more of these popping up, they'll want to keep doing it, because I think it's a wonderful thing.
You know, it sounds absolutely wonderful to go by to see that, because there is so much blight. And, you know, do you want to just keep cutting down weeds, or do you want to just keep throwing your garbage in the weeds, you know? So if you have these orchards, you know, the trees will provide shade and there'll be a lot less weeds. So it plays itself forward. It's not just about just putting trees there, because then the trees will offer food. They'll also provide shade, you know, and
right,
they'll
right.
make it look so much more presentable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it also becomes what it has done for the Columbus Street Greenway, which is a project that they're looking to create like public spaces for the neighborhood to congregate. It becomes a place for them to gather, a safe
right.
place for them to gather. So it changes the dynamics of the neighborhood in a positive way.
I think it changes the dynamics, you know, of the people, too, when they see them. Yeah, just on a short note, I recently was working with a client, and she was getting her scooter and going into her house, and she turned and looked, and she said, oh, my tree in the front has limes on it. And it was the first time it had limes on it. Well, she passed away within 2 days after that. But she looked at it, and she was so happy that it had limes on it. So it was just something that was important to her, you know. It's just something different, and, you know, a lot of people maybe have grown up with a lot of fruit trees around, and since the storm and things, those are gone, and now bringing them back, it really does bring that sense of, you know, comfort back to a lot of people. I was wondering, Marianne, if you could talk to us about the Roots on the Rooftop project. I know you're growing herbs and bringing them, and then they're sending them to market.
Right. Yeah, Roots on the Rooftop is actually an initiative of one of our members, which is AMPS, Aquaponic Modular Production Systems, founded by Doug Jacobs and Kevin Rothschild from Tulane. And they worked in conjunction with Rouse's Grocery and put an installation of recirculating hydroponic towers on the roof. And it is allowing Rouse's to have as fresh as possible herbs to use in their prepared foods and also to sell to consumers.
You know, for those people who are listening across the country, Rouse's is a local grocery store here in New Orleans, and they always are having signs up, and their advertising says local produce. So this is a good way of, you know, sticking with that marketing message.
Absolutely. We were really excited that they jumped on board of recirculating farming. They seem to love it, and I know they're very interested in expanding to other items beyond herbs in the very near future.
I was wondering if you could either, since the storm, I can remember saying, oh, you know, everybody's doing these great gardens and they're planting stuff in their backyard and, oh, it's great and everything. And people were really jumping on the bandwagon, but maybe potentially not realizing that that soil might not be that great because it had flooded. And for everybody across the country who may or may not realize this, when things flood, it's not just water, you know, in your backyard, from your backyard. It could be the gas station half a mile away where their gas had come up and was sitting in that water, or the hospital down the street who had all of their drugs and their nuclear medicine waste and their x-ray stuff and everything, and that sat in the water. So water is not really great in a flood. And after natural disasters, do you really want to go in and, you know, jump right on the bandwagon and start being planting things in the ground? You know, I know that that's a concept here where some people have said, well, the ground, I don't know, you know. And some said, don't worry about it, the plants will absorb it. Well, I know you both probably have a take on that. If you could share that, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. There can be some serious concerns after a major flood, hurricane, for sure. You know, salt water, even though it's wonderful in a lot of ways, it's not so wonderful for the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, contaminants. The industrial canal flooded, for example, and that's caused some problems in locations where that water infiltrated. One of the wonderful things about recirculating farms is that we can grow just about anywhere, including places that are contaminated, because we use a contained system and the plants aren't growing in soil. And so one of the reasons we decided to really put in a grassroots effort in New Orleans in building these farms is for that reason, that a lot of the soil is contaminated, isn't fit for growing, and it's a solution to allow people to grow their own healthy food in places where the soil isn't great. Now, New Orleans Food and Farm Network also has a soil growing project, and I'll let Sanjay talk more about that.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things, definitely, I mean, I think flooding is of concern of, like, what was in there. But one of the things you have to understand is any post-industrial city in the United States has issues of lead and potentially arsenic. A lot of it's from the leaded gasoline that we all had in the past.
Right.
So actually, this issue of, like, contaminated soil,
mm-hmm.
I guess over the last two decades, has been dealt with a lot of urban programs. I know that in New York City, where, like, from the 70s, they were thinking about that, they would do soil testing. Any project that we work on, we do soil testing, even if it's in backyards, and we actually advise people to, like, test their soils for levels of lead and arsenic in your soil. And there's a very simple kit that we send off to a lab, and it costs about $22 for an individual to actually for one test, and it'll tell you what parts per million there are. And then we are actually coming out with a position paper saying what we advise is the best soil contamination thresholds, primarily
right.
lead, that you should consider whether or not you should grow in the soil. And if you can't grow in the soil, then there's options of doing things like recirculating farms or creating raised beds in concrete, you know, concrete blocks put into like a 4x10 shape filled with clean soil that then you can grow in. And that's what we advise people for. So, I mean, there are definite ways of thinking about that. I'm not sure if everybody did that after the Katrina. But
right. Now,
anyone who's growing food, especially if you're going to market it, I think one of the things that you're going to have to say is that you've tested the soil, and this is what the contamination was, and this is how your food was grown. So people know, because we don't want people to have health problems down the line from eating fresh vegetables that they grew. You know, definitely leafy greens are a big issue, and most of the beds that we have helped create over 200 have our raised beds because the soil was at a contamination level that was too high. And and it's fine because the main way you can get contamination is through ingestion. So
right.
If it doesn't go into the plant, then you're not eating it.
You know, I think just the knowledge to know that there is a potential is so much more powerful than ignoring it. I mean, you just saying, oh, well, whatever, and walk away and just go about your business and planting and doing whatever and giving it to people is so socially irresponsible these days. And, you know, when you go to some of these farmers markets, you really are not sure. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and our farmers markets were all the Amish. So, you know, we knew what it was, where it was coming from, and what was blowing wind one way or water going the other way. That was just something that we grew up and we knew. And when you go to a farmers markets in so many of the other cities, you don't know where the things are coming from. I've even known of two farmers markets in the West. And what the farmers would do is they would come out with their boxes of everything that was, quote, grown, but they actually went down and bought where the restaurant people got from and then just came and resold it. So, you know, you really need to know where your farmers market items are coming from or where those growing items are coming from. And if people don't welcome it and give you some information or tell you about their farm or how they did it, you know, then maybe that might be something to consider before you actually give them your money and purchase that food, you know? Do you not?
Yeah, we all encourage people to know their farmers. And,
right.
I see bumper stickers all around, who's your farmer, know your farmer, know your food.
Right.
We have a map on our website that directs consumers to recirculating farmers all around the country. So they can find exactly where there are different recirculating commercial farms available so they can either direct buy from the grower or find out where the grower sells their products so they can be sure to get those. There are a number of other similar services for a variety of different farmers markets and farmers on the Internet. And I always encourage people, you know, no matter where you're buying your produce and food from, to know the source.
Yeah, actually, and there's the Global Resource Action Center, GRACE, has developed for New Orleans Eat Local Guide that talks about where are your local sources of food, be it a restaurant, be it a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they have them for so many areas of the country, and they're kind enough to create this resource for New Orleans, and it's available on our website.
Well, I think that there's no guidelines and there's no rules that, you know, is steadfast that if I have a bunch of farms, you know, that they're all safe, you know. When, in other words, like anybody can put up a bunch of tables together and say all of us are farmers and we're all going to, you know, work together. So it's not regulated. But I'm sure, you know, with your groups, you do have guidelines. I did see guidelines on your websites.
Well, there's guidelines. There's parameters you have to follow. I mean, there's definitely issues about, a lot of food systems organizations talk about, you know, spraying of pesticides or use of fertilizers and also labor issues. I mean, there's all those different issues. What we have encouraged people to do, and this is kind of like, it's a green encouragement, but at the same time, it's really practical encouragement in the sense that if you limit the amount of chemical fertilizers you need, and if you limit the amount of spraying you do, and you can do it by yourself, you're going to save yourself money, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
The trade-off is in maybe increased labor, but at the same time, it is definitely going to be fresher and safer and more nutritious if you do it that way. We don't go around telling people not to spray, but we definitely tell them, here's a way of dealing with pests in a different way. And we hope that they do it. And I think as more and more comes to market, I think certain parameters, requirements of, let's say, the markets, be it a restaurant, be it a store, will want to know. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's when maybe it might not be regulated, but it may be, you know, public information will be given out so that people will know. And I think most of the people we work with are looking at it doing it sustainably, because if it is chemically based growing, let's say, that's like that's the monthly rent that you have to pay to basically grow those vegetables. And I think that's kind of what we're supporting, is those people who don't want to do it that way.
And you're right. We do also have what we call guiding principles for our member farmers, and it specifically explains things like, you know, animal handling and humanely raised, humanely slaughtered fish, the stocking density of fish, the use of pesticides or chemicals, generally speaking, or circulating farms, because they're closed loop, also tend to be cleaner. You know, things outside the farm don't get in, things inside the farm don't get out. So it's easier to not use any chemicals. And so we include all of those things in our guidelines for farms that are just starting up or who have been growing for some time and are hoping to provide a more natural product.
So we're coming down at the top of the hour, so if you'd like to talk about your co-project, I know someone may have just come on the line and maybe missed that, the project that you are both working on together.
Sure. I had mentioned it earlier. That's the Food and Farm Center that we're building in downtown New Orleans that will provide a number of different programs and urban farming demonstrations, classes like farm-to-table cooking classes, health aid cooking classes, how to jar foods, how to can foods, training of new and beginning farmers and also advanced farmers, connecting people with mentors and other experts that can assist them in starting their own farm or working on a farm. It's going to be a hub for a number of things, essentially research, training, education, and community development and support.
When will this be available?
Well, we're hoping to break ground in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've been always talking about is there are so many different activities going on in the city, different models and different strategies, and we're hoping, I mean, for Food and Farm Network, one of the reasons why this is exciting is it becomes another entry point for a lot of people who may not be interested in farming yet and maybe soon to know where are all the other things happening in the city so that we, you know, make everyone aware of, like, the many different great projects happening in the city that, you know, will be increasing. And, you know, it's the rebuilding of the city, but hopefully in a different way than what it has been in the past. And that's what we're hoping for, is to increase that momentum by serving as, you know, as a hub and as an information resource as well to get people involved.
You know, I had a question on the recirculating farms for Marianne. When you were doing the hydroponics, like on top of the rooftops and stuff, if a storm had come along, are there ways that those things can just be moved, or are they stable? In other words, if I have a farm, let's say it's outdoors and I really don't want to disrupt it and there's maybe a hurricane coming, you know, can I take my hydroponic garden, maybe drag it into a garage or a warehouse? Or, you know, if I have these beds that are above ground, can those come inside and then be brought back out afterwards?
Well, a lot of it depends on design. The roof on the rooftop project, yes, is mobile. They are vertical towers and they're each individual units. And so you could, you know, unplug and pull them indoors and keep them safe during a storm. Many of the farms we work with are more permanent in nature, and they, you know, build them as best they can to withstand the storms. A lot of folks have storm prevention built into their design, where they can, you know, cap the fish tanks and are running on backup power as well as solar or wind energy or geothermal. There's a number of ways to power the farms. Most of them have, you know, backup systems to make sure that the plants and the fish will get adequate air and what they need during the time of a storm. So a lot of it depends on farm design.
Yeah, and I would say raised beds, you're not moving them. I mean, they're movable, but not, you can't roll them anywhere.
Right.
And we
know,
use concrete blocks because of just the amount of rain that we have here, they just hold up better.
Because we remember after Katrina, I mean, you know, the first thing that was available was, you know, the Red Cross trucks, which were great, and we appreciate them. And then after that, it was hamburgers and cans of soda, you know. and that went on for so long, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're able to get something up pretty quickly afterwards, you know, because you do have a growing time. It's not like I can throw some seeds out or throw some plants out today and I'll have something next week. You've got a few weeks or, you know, months in some areas to get some produce, correct?
True, and actually, we have some innovative farmers who are growing sprouts. Microgreens, where in about 10 days from peas and from other kinds of vegetables, you eat the leaves, and they're actually doing salads of that.
My favorite.
Kind of fascinating to realize that those types of microgreens are being. There's one entrepreneurial farmer who is selling to fancy restaurants right now.
Right.
Microgreens, which helps him develop his farm further, because his idea is to eventually make it where he can just be subsidizing the growing of vegetables to be sold in grocery stores, local grocery corner stores, not like the big supermarkets, microgreens. So it's like, you know, there is that innovative creativity that's going on here in this city that's like, wow, we really need to tap into that and see if anyone's interested in, like, learning from that and then doing something else as well.
And as I mentioned, because the towers can be inside, you can actually do recirculating farms indoors. So if for some reason it's not feasible to have a farm right away outdoors, you would be able to produce vegetables and herbs and greens indoors for a period of time.
You could at least get something started and be doing something, you know. Yeah, using them as a sprout or a microgreen. I absolutely love microgreens. It's my, like, favorite thing. I have a nephew who has a CSA up in Western Massachusetts, and I said, oh, please do the microgreens and mail them to me. And he's like, I'm too busy with my chickens, you know. So he's not doing my microgreens, so I guess I'll have to check out your source.
I mean, I think and the thing is that you have to understand that there's not only can you be doing microgreens, but, you know, there's other types of vegetables that grow really, really fast as well. So
right.
You know, there is that expertise out there. People know what's available.
Absolutely. Well, I know a lot of people listen to this show in archives, and if you could both give me your contact information again, that would be wonderful.
Sure. So this is Mary Ann Caffone, and I'm the executive director of the Recirculating Farms Coalition. Our website is www.recirculatingfarms.org, and folks can also email info@recirculatingfarms.org. And we are also on Facebook and Twitter, so folks can follow us there as well.
And this is Sanjay Karad. I am the executive director of the New Orleans Food and Farm Network. Our website is www.noffn.org. You can also email info@noffn.org. And as Marianne says, we are also on Twitter and on Facebook and on other things that we're not sure what we are on, but we are. We try to broadcast our social presence as much as possible.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I do know that you both do use interns, and Sanjay, you do use volunteers. And in this town where everybody comes here for a vacation and is looking to do some projects here, I'm sure you could use some interns and volunteers year-round. Is that correct?
Definitely. For Food and Farm Network, we tried to serve as a clearinghouse of opportunities that all our partner organizations might have. So it might be a specific farm It might be an organization. It might be a related organization that's dealing with land issues in a neighborhood. So we post them on our website right below the feature section so that people can see that. So we'll post our own. We post other people. We want to make sure that, you know, if whoever's interested, we try to connect them with people.
And we will also have our internships and opportunities posted on NOFIN, but we also have a page on our website that says work with us, and we post all our internship and volunteer opportunities there year-round. We take about 8 to 10 interns every semester. We just work on semesters because many of them are college students. And over the summer, and we need volunteers all the time to help with garden builds and other farm-related chores.
Do the interns and volunteers need to pay to work with you, either?
Oh, no. The opportunities are free, and in fact, we like to make sure that they get something very important out of it, including experience, and then depending on the internship, either hands-on experience or creation of products that they can use in professional settings in the future. And many of our interns actually get college credit, or some of them have done work-study with us as well.
Great, because I've spoken with a few nonprofits that they were charging their volunteers to come and do a project, and it was, okay. I guess maybe that kind of takes the idea of nonprofit to a little extent, you know?
Well, it's often what it is and, you know, it is a model that some nonprofits use, and it's kind of like a fee-for-service in the sense that you are being tasked.
Right.
You're like really actually having a very intensive educational experience.
Right.
I've always kind of followed the rule that as an intern comes to us, I want to understand what they're interested in achieving and how that could fit with us, because I think, you know, trying to be that clearinghouse and that safe zone for people to feel like they could be creative, I want them to come up with like what they're interested in and try to do that. So like, them having to pay me to have them to thank is not really something I want to do. So we keep those as free as, you know, as possible.
I think that's absolutely wonderful, because that's so important for people coming into the, you know, they're coming to help and to learn and to share information, and, you know,
it's like a lot of people want to get experience in how to get involved in working on community food systems. Right, or
right.
Food justice, or urban agriculture, and this may be the entry point for them to then eventually, you know, be a farmer, or be a marketer of it, or even be part of a nonprofit that addresses a gap that's there out there. And I think that's important: is you provide a broad-based, you know, approach to it for interns, and then, you know, volunteers and. And certain interns have very specific things, and we've had a series of blog interns, people who really write a lot, who are willing to do interviews for specific stories around New Orleans. It has worked out rather well, because there's only so much staff can do, and these individuals are really interested in very specific things, so they do that research and write it up, and they get credit for it.
Well, I think that's absolutely wonderful. So if there's other people listening on the show that would like to potentially volunteer or do an internship with Recirculating Farms Coalition or the New Orleans Food and Farm Network, please contact them directly at their websites at recirculatingfarms.org or NOFFN.org. And I'd like to thank you both for being on my show today. It was a pleasure. I'm sure we learned so much about how you can actually start eating healthy here in the Big Easy, but you can also learn how to take these ideas home or how to help the people here and bring these ideas forward. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. It was great.
Thank you. And if you need any further help, please contact Sanjay and Marianne. Their websites are listed on the description of this show. And if you'd like to have any further information from me, My website is www.outofthebox.healthcare.com. And this is Dr. Gallagher, and we will be speaking with you tomorrow. Thank you for being with us.